Hey, everybody. Welcome to Therapy Rocks, a personal growth podcast. I'm your host, Signa Darpinian, co-author of No Way and Raising Body Positive Teens, both with Jessica Kingsley Publishers in London. If you're looking for tools to increase self-discovery and deepen your compassion for yourself and others, I invite you into my conversation today with my guest, Dayo Ajanaku, founder of The Black Enneagram, making the Enneagram accessible for communities of color. Dayo is a lifelong student focused on bringing joy and justice into the world. She offers basic Enneagram education through Black culture and Black images and regularly engages in issues of faith, justice, self-awareness, love, and unapologetic joy. Dayo is a 25-year-old Nigerian-American woman currently attending Berkeley Law, class of 2024 in the San Francisco Bay Area, working on her certification with the Narrative Enneagram. Dayo, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, Signa.
It's so fun to actually have you live in the studio. It's the coolest. Yeah. I don't get to have guests here live.
I've never done this before, so this is, wow.
Is this neat?
It's amazing.
I told you, right? Thank you for saying yes.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. So, Dayo, I thought we'd get started today with the basics of the Enneagram.
Yeah.
How would you describe the Enneagram to our listeners?
Yeah. So the Enneagram, if you don't know, is a personality typing system. It's very similar to like Myers-Briggs. I wouldn't say Zodiacs, but people also compare it to Zodiacs. What makes it different from like a Zodiac or a Myers-Briggs is that it assesses your motivation rather than your behavior. So that means that, you know, on the surface, what you do is not the focus of the Enneagram. It's really why you're doing what you're doing. There's nine types in total, and each of the nine types is motivated by a different thing. They have different core desires, different core fears. You can have two individuals who share behavioral traits, right? But the reason behind why they're doing it is very, very different. So the Enneagram cuts to the core of that. Not only that, but the Enneagram draws on ancient wisdom while also using like modern day psychology theory. So you kind of get the best of both worlds. You get the spiritual aspect of it. That's what Myers-Briggs misses, is the spiritual aspect of it. But you also get like the kind of educational like psychology piece of it as well. If you kind of need a visual of how, because the Enneagram is a very visual tool, which is very different from the other ones as well. The types are organized in a circle, and they go from one to nine, and nine is at the very, very top. And each person is going to feel connected to one main type as their type structure. But there's other parts of the number that like makes you who you are. Like, for example, your wings, your subtypes, your defense mechanisms, like all of those things go into like your Enneagram type. Every person is going to feel connected to that one type structure, and this is going to be the main type. And it's the type that we present in the world. It's kind of like, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about Chichi and how in Chichi's book, Chichi Agarwal's book, The Enneagram for Black Liberation, she describes your type as your armor. Mm. And so the type that you have is the type that you present to the world in order to feel or to experience or to get, you know, to feel good, to feel loved, to feel valuable, to feel special, to be smart, to be safe, satisfied, protected, and at peace. We're all trying to get to those things. And so the Enneagram kind of like, acknowledges that, and then like asks, is how can you take the armor off and feel safe regardless of whether you have the armor on? The Enneagram is a layered, it's very, very layered. There's so much that goes into it.
Oh, that's a cool way of saying it's very layered. You know, and you had me read Chichi's book, The Enneagram for Black Liberation, and you didn't mention that you were interviewed for the book and you're in the chapter on the type one.
Yes.
Can you describe a little bit what it might look like, that piece you were talking about that assesses motivation rather than behavior? What might that look like for a type one?
I think the reason why the motivation piece is important is because you can have two people who are exhibiting very similar behaviors. So, for example, a type one and a type three are very, very achievement oriented. But why they're doing those things is very, very vastly different. A one is doing it because they believe that, like, like success in some way is good. Like they're doing it for the sake of goodness, while the three is doing it for the sake of just like image, for the sake of success, for the sake of like they put their value in what they do, while ones put their value in how good they are. They're doing the same thing, right? They may be both like top of their class, valedictorians, you know, law students, doc, like, you know, med school. Like they may both look the same on the outside, but why they're, what they're motivated by is vastly different.
With the one, what is an example of the armor for the one?
As a one, I'm very committed to protecting people's perception of me. Like if people, okay, my biggest fear is someone saying you're a bad person. And I think that's kind of the armor. It's like I'm, everything that I do is from this desire to avoid that from happening, from someone saying that to me. So my armor is I'm going to be the best. I'm going to be the best daughter, the best friend. I'm going to be like, I'm going to be so good. I'm going to never make a mistake. I'm going to be essentially perfect, right? Something you can never do. Perfection is the armor. That's the thing.
Perfection
like,
is the armor.
Trying to like reach this level of like this high unattainable standard so that no one can ever like say that you did anything wrong. No one can ever call you out. No one can say you made a mistake. Like if you always do everything right, then there's no reason for anyone to call you a bad person. There's no reason for anyone to say a bad thing about you. And you're protected. You feel safe. It's not real, right? Like as human beings, you're going to make mistakes and not do things correctly. But as a one, we believe that, okay, if I can just be perfect, if I can just not make a mistake, then I'm safe. Then I'm good. Then I'm loved. Like I'm loved for my perfectionism. I'm loved for being put together. I think even as a one, I've heard a lot, like, you look like you have your life all together. You look like you just have it all. And that's like not fun to hear because like it kind of puts that pressure on of like, now I can't mess up now because people are already showing me that they perceive me as perfect, right? They perceive me as someone who has no, like, doesn't fall. So hearing that, don't say that to your friends. Like, that's just not a fun thing to hear. As a one, as I think even as a three, to hear, oh, you have it all, you look like you have it all together, it's actually feeding the armor. It's actually feeding that core fear of, like, if I make a mistake, no one will love me. Like, that's kind of the thing that it's feeding. So, yeah, that was a lot.
Oh, that's a really important point. If I make a mistake, no one will love me.
Yeah.
So if I'm perfect and I don't make any mistakes and I'm good and everybody loves me, then I'm worthy of love and belonging.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it.
Oh, gosh, that's so powerful. Okay, so Dio, how about the nine types? We just spoke about the one.
Right.
What about the other types?
Yes. Okay. We're going to do rundown of all the nine types. So I'm going to kind of go out of order. We're going to chop them up between. So the first three are going to be body types. And then the next three will be the heart types. And the last three will be the head types. There we go. And then I think what I just did right there is called the centers of intelligence. And centers of intelligence are kind of, the way I describe it is like those are the ways that people make decisions. So body types make decisions off of their gut, and then head types make decisions off of their mind, like logic, and then heart types make decisions off of like what they feel. So all three different, you know, intelligence centers kind of they group them that way because that's kind of, it just makes sense to do that. So we're going to go in that order. It's not going to be 1 through 9. It's going to be kind of out of order, but it makes sense because they kind of are grouped in that way. So let's get started. So the nine, we're going to start with the nine because the nines always get left out. They're always the last ones, but now we're making them first. We love you.
I love that.
Yes. The type nine is the peacemaker. Their core desire is to have inner peace, and their core fear is to be separated or to lose connection. They're described as being very pleasant, you know, very easygoing. They are great mediators. Like that word peacemaker is like very, 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 very accurate for them. A conflict is like their biggest fear because they fear losing that connection. They fear, you know, creating conflict where someone like doesn't want to be like in a relationship with them anymore. That's like one of their biggest fears. The type eight is the challenger, and their core desire is to protect themselves and to be in control. Their core fear is being harmed or being controlled by others. They have a very commanding personality. People can experience them as very intense and confrontational. They don't back down from a challenge. They have this incessant need to be strong and to avoid being weak, being perceived as weak. But they are champions for the underdog for sure. The type one is the perfectionist. Their core desire is being good, having integrity, and being balanced. Their core fear is being corrupt, evil, or defective. They're very ethical people. They live in binaries, the good and bad, the right and wrong. They're very dedicated, reliable people. They say if a one tells you they're going to do something, they're going to do it. It's very rare, like unless they're like on their last leg, they will say no. But if they say they're going to do something for you, they will show up for you. And they really are afraid of, like I said earlier, we really fear, you know, like mistakes and being mm-hmm. blamed. Or like we don't want to experience that. The type three is the performer or the achiever. Another caveat is that the names are different. Some people call them different things. So, for example, the one sometimes is called the reformer. Mm. And then sometimes the three is called, like I said, the achiever. And sometimes the eight is called the protector, right? Oh. Instead of the challenger.
Okay.
And the nine is sometimes called the mediator. I think that's their other name. So, yeah, I'll like give both names in case like one. Because I think sometimes when one's here, perfectionist is like, I'm not a perfectionist. I don't identify as being a perfectionist. So that name can be very like off-putting for people who don't identify that way.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So reformer is another one. And then one thing yes. I want to say mm-hmm. about the one, we both happen to be one.
Oh, someone didn't know that.
Yes,
okay.
Yes, I'm a one, big time.
Yeah,
and I think it's interesting. I read in an Enneagram book that one way to know your type
yeah.
is when you're reading the chapters about a particular type, you feel as though yeah. somebody like hacked your diary.
That's exactly what
yeah.
it is.
And then one other thing I want to say about the type one that I noticed that you know is they seem to be the most critical.
Mm, yes,
critical of self.
Yes,
but then that critiquing or that judgment can be transferred outward
absolutely,
as well.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. They have a strong inner critic.
Right.
Very, very strong. Very demanding right. inner critic.
But I like the idea of, you know, if you can soften that self-criticism, yeah. then you can also extend that outward.
Exactly.
Yeah. I like that. That's what the Enneagram does for me.
Right.
It really softens
right.
that judgment.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, I interrupted.
No, that was perfect.
Yeah.
I love that. I didn't know you were a one too.
Oh,
okay.
I'm such a one. You didn't notice the play-by-play I gave you throughout this whole thing.
Yeah. I think that's why like yeah. this has been so like smooth because
you're like
oh,
duh, it's
I'm
so obvious.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. The type two is the helper. Now we're in the heart types, the heart intelligence centers. Type two is the helper, or their other name is the helper or the giver. The giver. Mm. So the core desire for the two is to be and feel loved. Their core fear is being unwanted. Or feeling unworthy of being loved. They're very, oh my gosh, twos. Twos are very warm, very caring, very giving people. But the problem with that is that sometimes they, because they're really what they're doing when they're unconscious is that they're giving to get, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that can come off as that can come off as very manipulative to a lot of people. And the reason why they're giving to get is because they do know their own needs, but they don't want to like act, or they're afraid of being rejected by acting, or they just don't know their own needs. They're not aware of their own needs enough to be like, they don't even know what to ask for sometimes. And so sometimes the twos can come off as, oh yeah, they're so great, they're so loving, they're so this. But when they're not getting what they need, or when you're not reciprocating that same energy to them, they can get very like, I think the vice for them is pride, right?
Mm.
They can start to feel like, I've done all these things for you. How dare you not like come up, like show up for me, do this for me. So twos are one of like, twos are, and I think in Chi-Chi's book, she also mentions how like a lot of women will mistype as twos because we're taught to be helpers. We're taught to be, I mean, even the church does that. They call women the helpmeet of a man. Like, it's insane.
I thought that was really interesting to see that women are often
yeah,
mistyped
as
twos.
Twos.
And then I imagine that the twos also can be resentful if
oh,
they don't
yes.
get that reciprocity.
Absolutely.
But you'd have to be really awake
yes.
and aware to
yeah.
make sure that's like, hey, this is getting a little lopsided,
yes,
you know,
exactly.
with the two.
Yeah. And being courageous enough and brave enough to be like, I need XYZ to
mm-hmm.
say what you need. And
mm-hmm.
then if someone can't meet you there, you know, you have a decision to make at that
totally.
point, but like asking for what you need is like pivotal, so
okay.
important. Okay, the type four, the romantic or the individualist. Their core desire is to find themselves, to be unique and to discover their significance and to be special. Their core fear is not having a distinct identity or personal significance. One of the good things about fours is that they are incredibly creative people. They take, because they're very emotional, like they have a really rich inner life. And so they have the ability to tap into very, you know, high level and low level emotions, right? They can go like really deep into the depression, the grief. They can really sit with someone there, but they can also sit with you in the joy and the, you know, all the bliss and all of those things. And what's good about that is they can take all of those things and turn it into a thing, right? That's where they get their creative fuel from, is because they're just so in touch and in tune with themselves. That's the gift that they bring to the world as fours, is that they have the ability to just go there with you. Like if you're going through really difficult things, go to a four, because they can hold space for you in ways that a lot of other types just struggle with.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah. But some of their the downside sometimes of fours, they can be very, very moody. They also really struggle with, and they can also come off as very like, I don't know what the word is, like selfish. I think that's a hard, I can't think of a better word right now, but they can come off as very selfish because they're very focused on me. They're very focused mm-hmm. on what do I need? How can I, you know, be like the most special? How can I be the most unique? They're like, you know what I mean? I feel like this varies depending on their subtype, and subtype is a whole nother can of worms. But if someone is a social subtype, if a four is a social subtype, they may not look this way. But if they are like especially if they're a one-to-one, or if they're, or even if they're a self-prez, like even if worse, if they're a self-prez, that individualism can like really like, it can help, they become kind of self-absorbed to a point where it's difficult for them to like see that other people kind of exist too. And that also depends on cultural, right? Because there are some cultures where you can't do that. Like Black community and in the Asian community, women cannot just be like, I'm just going to focus on myself. And like, you cannot, there's no, like your family would never allow you to do that. So there's also a cultural piece where like, yeah, like in general, fours can be very individualistic, but depending on their cultural background and how they were raised and the messages that were told to them, especially as women, like they may not feel like they have permission to even like go off on their own and like find themselves. Like a lot of other people can just go and like, you know, spend 2 years in a different country and not talk to their family, but like that's not an option for some people. Like we come, especially if you come from a very collectivist culture.
Would the armor then for the four be that uniqueness?
Yes. Okay. Exactly. I think Chi-Chi describes it as exceptionality.
Okay.
Yeah.
Exceptionality.
Wanting to be exceptional.
So the fear would be to be
ordinary.
Just ordinary.
Regular.
Yeah.
Basic.
Okay.
The type six, the loyalist. Their core desire is to have support and security. Their core fear is to be without guidance and not having clear direction or support. They are incredibly loyal people. And then the other name for the six is the loyal skeptic. So there's just something, there's another can of worms, but there's something called the phobic, counterphobic sixes and phobic sixes. And so one of those, I forget which one is which, but one of the types of sixes is that they are more like weary of risk, and the other one is very like, let's do all the risky things, right? Mm. Not necessarily with the purpose of courage, but because they're like, the way that they combat their anxiety with risky things is by facing the risk head on. Mm. So there's just different types, like different, there's within the type six structure, there's phobic and counterphobic, and depending on which one they are, they may be super risk averse or they may be super like risk taking. Yeah. So it just depends. They're very practical, very trustworthy. They are the people you go to when you need to solve problems. They're great at finding solutions because they will poke holes in everything, and they think of every single possible situation. Worst case scenario is like fun for them. Like they love to think like, what could go wrong and how can I make sure it does not go wrong? They often struggle with anxiety because when you're thinking of worst case scenarios all the time, like you're going to be anxious. There's no way that you can avoid that feeling. So yeah, those are our sixes. They're amazing people. We love them.
One thing that I know about the sixes, sixes that I know, they're also very funny.
Oh yes.
They're a very witty, funny type.
Yes, they are.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. They bring people together. And then when they bring those people together, like it's the best time. One of my favorite male friends is a six, and I'm just like, the reason why we get along so well is because like he's just very lighthearted, very chill, very like good energy, good heart. Like I don't know, like I feel like sixes are amazing. It's that wing seven that gives them that like extra juice of let's have fun but like be safe.
I know, it's just so interesting because I feel like I laugh the hardest with my six friends, but they're also the most anxious, so it's an interesting thing. Yeah. So anyway, I thought I'd bring that in.
Yes. Okay. The type five, the observer or the investigator. Their core desire is to be competent and capable. Their core fear is being useless or helpless or not knowing. So knowledge is really important for the five. They're very analytical. They're often experts in their field. They can come off as very detached and very, like, you know, antisocial, introverted, very private. They will often avoid trying to rely on other people. My best friend is a five. She's currently in a relationship, and it's really interesting to watch her, like, try to depend and, like, get support from him. And I'm just like, yeah, this is her five showing up, because she doesn't want to rely. That fear of relying on people and then being let down is just really difficult for fives. So, like, watching her navigate that has been, like, showing me even more about fives. I think I learned the most about the types by watching human people, like live their life. Because, mm-hmm. Like, you can learn a lot on paper, but, like, the actual lived experiences of people matter a lot more. So yeah, those are our fives.
Well, in the fives, I have a really good friend that's a five, yeah. And I mean, it just fits him to a T.
Oh, wow.
And I noticed that, he seems to have an incredibly strong sense of self.
Yes.
Like, he knows who he is.
Exactly. And there's, like, no budging on that.
No budging.
There's no, like, oh, like, you know, this person wants me to do X, Y, Z, so I'm going to be a different person for them.
No.
Not at all.
It's a really cool thing to witness.
Yeah. They're also very, I'm not sure if you observe this with your friend, but they're very protective of their energy.
Absolutely.
They're not going to be like, oh, like, you know, there's a party at five. They have this, like, social battery. There's like, if I don't have enough social energy to go to this event, I'm going to not show up. And they don't care.
Really good boundaries.
Yeah,
they're not going to be the type to say yes to something they want to say no to.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a gift. Like, yeah, I think a lot of us can learn from that.
I know. I just watch it. I'm like, wow. Yeah. Look at those boundaries.
Yeah. I think from the receiving end, receiving a five, it's like, oh, that's hard. Like, because, you know, like ones or like twos, like, you would go out of your way.
Totally.
Even if you had like a zero, you would go out of your way to do it. So, like, experiencing my best friend as a five, I'm like, oh, like, I have to respect
it's good modeling the boundaries. And so knowledge is their armor.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. Okay. Yes. They believe that the more they know, the safer they are.
Ooh.
It's like they feel the most comfortable in a book or, you know, reading an article. Like, that's, they're very, very smart people. The sciences, math. They can also be very creative. My friend is very, very creative. Plays the piano. Like, you know, I feel like people, like, stereotype fives as being, like, very, like, square. But no, mm-hmm. they're, like, and she's also very fun and very funny and, like, a good time as well. But I feel like fives just have this innate ability to, like, they take a topic and they deep dive. Mm-hmm. And they can go to, like, the depths of that topic for, like, days.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a great example.
Yeah. Okay. The seven. The seven is either called the enthusiast or the... Oh, epicure. I don't know what the word epicure means, but that's another name for it.
I don't
it.
Either.
Okay.
I mean, I've heard it, but yeah.
I don't know what it means, but either called the enthusiast or the epicure. Their core desire is to be satisfied and content. Their core fear is to be deprived and in pain. They're very, very fun people, very spontaneous, very adventurous. But the problem is they're doing that to avoid hard things. Like, they're doing that to run from the pain. They use fun as an excuse to not deal with their stuff. And so, yeah, they, it's really, I think a lot of times you'll experience sevens as being, like, toxically positive. Like, you're, like, you can be going through a really, really hard thing. And this is, like, an unconscious, like, slash unhealthy type seven. Like, you can come to a type seven and you can be going through a really, really hard thing. And their response, you know, they think that they're helping you. Their response can be like, well, look at the bright side. Look at this. But you just want someone to sit with you in your pain.
Like, and always a silver lining.
Right.
Always
a silver lining.
Little too soon, maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
Sometimes people just need you to, like, be with them. And not offer a solution, not tell them that, oh, you know, tomorrow will be a better day. No, today's a bad day. Let me just enjoy it. Like, not enjoy it, but, like, let me just sit in this bad day and let the feeling
process
pass.
Process a second.
And process, exactly. So I think sevens kind of struggle with that. But as they move to, like, being more conscious and more healthy, they kind of, you know, are able to sit in that pain a little bit more. So, yeah.
One thing I noticed about the seven in the reading that you suggested to me is that they're so... on to the next thing,
the next
big adventure that they sometimes can miss the present moment.
Yeah, that's so good.
I thought that was an interesting piece.
Yeah, that's a big piece. That's really important. I think all the types struggle with being present, but I think sevens especially struggle with being present.
Right.
Yeah.
And maybe I'll edit this out. Maybe I won't, Dio, but the sevens, like, for a one who's like a little planner and everything's planned out, the seven is like, spontaneous.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Scares me.
I
mean, I need a little seven.
Yeah.
I need a little seven.
I will say, I don't know know what it was, but I made a huge move to seven this year. Like a huge, you know, sevens, we'll talk about stress and growth arrows, but the ones go to seven in growth. And I've been really living in my seven for a couple months now. It's been very interesting to watch myself do that. I can see
that would be a good move.
Yeah.
That would be a good move.
Especially in law school. Like, yeah. I need to have fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm excited to move into that. Well, let's go into that next.
Okay.
Can you talk us through the wings?
Yeah.
They're, I think, also called the stress and security numbers on the Enneagram.
Yeah.
And to be honest, Dio, no matter how much I read about the Enneagram, which is not a ton.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't quite get the wings.
Yeah,
I don't
understand.
And I thought, like, why try to understand them? Because Dio's coming.
I'm great.
I don't have to. I mean, sorry, but yeah.
Yeah. No, the way that I understand the wings is, visually, I think you have to have a visual. So like, if you look at the Enneagram, it's a circle, right? And all of the numbers are next to another number. I'm going to use the one as an example because that's what I'm most familiar with. That's who I am. So ones, you know, we have our core type, but in certain situations, like let's say I'm with my family. When I'm with my family, I take on the two. Like I kind of take on the characteristics of them that I need to survive in my family, right? When I'm with my friends, I can take on the nine, right? So the one is situated between the two and the nine. And this is also an important thing because, like, I think visually you have to kind of see this happening on the map. It's kind of like in certain situations, your type structure isn't going to help you in that situation. Like if you're like in like I said, a family situation, it's helpful for you. It's helpful for me as a one who's definitely a planner, but to go into my helper giver mode. I'm the oldest daughter in my family. So I kind of have to, but I naturally just like take on the, how can I help? What can I give? How can I support? Like, you know what I mean? Just because like that's what the situation calls for.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
Right, right. And so it's not necessarily that you are that type. It's not necessarily that you become that type. It's just that you are taking on. It's like, I think we talked about it a little bit earlier, Chi-Chi's example of like, it's kind of like going to a neighbor's house. Like you know, you have your own house, you know, you live in the one, right? But sometimes you just need to borrow from another type. You need to borrow from a neighbor. You need to borrow from someone who isn't you because they have something that you don't. Oh my gosh, this is so important. Do you know that inside of all of us, we have all nine types?
I thought that I saw that on your blog.
Yes.
And I think that's really
vital.
Fascinating.
Yes, yes.
You said you are a type one.
Yeah.
But you become a type two, the helper, in certain settings.
You take on certain traits of the type two.
I see.
Yeah, in certain settings. To like not survive, but like to just like make the situation.
To adapt?
Yeah, that's a perfect word.
Okay.
It's a perfect word.
I see. So don't confuse it with the other type that you score high on.
Right,
that's
right,
not
right.
A wing.
Yeah.
I
feel like the rigidity of like, oh, I'm a one, so I'm always going to be a one. I mean, you always argue like you're a one from birth, you're a one until you die. But like, and you're going to take on different. The goal really is to be all nine. The goal is to like be able to draw on the different types. Yeah.
To have them integrated.
Yeah,
I saw a lot written about integration.
Yes.
Integration
that's
is key.
The word,
okay.
Exactly. And then you talked about stress and growth arrows. Those are my favorite topics. So with the one, it's also a very visual thing with stress and growth arrows. But like the arrows that are pointing away from your number is your stress number, and the arrow that's pointing towards your number is the growth arrow. So growth number. So if you're looking at a map of the Enneagram, you want to get one that has the actual physical arrows in the middle and not just like lines, so you can see where you go in growth and stress. But for example, for the one goes to four in stress. So the thing that's interesting, and we also go to seven in growth. The thing that's interesting that I think there's different schools of thought on this is that it's not that rigid, right? There are times where as a one, even though I go to four in stress, typically I can actually take on the positives of the four as well when I'm in growth. And then also as a set for the seven, it's very complicated, but like, and also when I'm in growth, I can take on the positives of the seven, but when I'm in stress, I can also take on the negatives of the seven as well.
I see.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
So you can take on the negatives or the positives
of those arrows. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Cause I think the stereotype is like, oh, like you're one, you're in stress, you're going to be sad, depressed, melancholy. But I've seen myself when I'm in like a really, really good place become incredibly creative. That's a very four thing. Also a very seven thing, but like it's also a very four thing. Like I can move that depression, that melancholy, I can move it into like a creative project in the way that fours can, right? You can kind of take on the positive attributes of them. But I've also seen, right, with me going to, you know, the typical, you're going to seven in growth, you know, you're becoming more spontaneous, more all these things. But I've also known myself become more indulgent, right? Like I'll spend incredible amounts of money on things I don't need, right? Like
I see.
Yeah. So like you can take on both. Both in both stress and growth. I think those are really important because it's really helpful when you know where you go in stress and growth so you can identify where am I. Like, it can kind of show you your emotional location sometimes if you're not aware of, like, am I, like, well, like, just kind of notice. And that's why it's important to know about all nine numbers, not, like, in depth, but, like, knowing about, well, I guess specifically knowing about the numbers that affect and influence you, like your growth and stress, your wings, your possible wings. I think that's something I didn't say about the wings is that it's possible for you to have neither wing. It's also possible for you to just have one. It's also possible for you to use both.
I see.
It's not a very rigid system. The Enneagram is not a very rigid system. It's very dynamic. You can kind of like play and flow with it. So I can have, like, you know, we're both ones, but we present very differently. Like, we like show up in the world very differently. And that might be because you have a stronger wing nine or a stronger wing two, or maybe we have different subtypes, right? Or maybe we just, like, you know, the way that we handle stress is different as ones. You know what I mean? So it's not like if we're both ones, we're going to look exactly the same, act exactly the same.
Right.
It's just so much dynamism underneath all of it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So there's some similarities, yes, but it can express itself differently.
So differently.
Okay.
So differently, yeah.
Okay. Why is it important that we learn about the Enneagram from the lens of someone holding a marginalized identity?
Yeah. Yeah. I was just kind of getting to that, right? Mm-hmm. Of talking about, like, I'm a Black woman, yes, you're a white woman, right? Mm-hmm. We're both ones, but we look like we present to the world very differently. Mm-hmm. I think you just have to be conscious about the fact that, like, expression of a type will just vary depending on someone's cultural identity, their socioeconomic status, like their race, all of those things, like all of those things matter when you're talking to someone. For example, let's take the ones out of it. Let's talk about eights. Like, eights is probably the most obvious example, because you can have a Black female eight, you know, and she's in her full eightness, right? And then you can have a white male eight and he's in his full eightness, right? And the way people receive those two different types are very different. Very different. Like, vastly
well
different.
Said.
Yeah. Like, people are not going to give as much. Because, you know, as Black women, we have the stereotype as being an angry Black woman. No one wants to be called an angry Black woman. So a Black woman who's an eight may not look like an eight because she has to kind of protect herself and suppress that, like, outwardly angry angry, like, personality. Not all Black female eights will suppress it, though. Some Black female eights will show you the anger. I've definitely met them. But I also have met a lot of Black female eights who are like, yeah, I can't be that. I can't really fully be my angry eight self. I don't want to call them angry, but, like, I can't really, like, express that anger into its fullness because, like, people are just not going to, like, especially in work, people are not going to receive that well from a Black woman in the same way they might receive it well. Or not even receive it well, but they'll have more grace for it for, like, white men when they kind of show that anger. Like, I think, I mean,
it's so culturally sanctioned.
Yeah. And I think that it also influences mistyping. It's hard for especially people of color who are, like, kind of under this microscope of how they should be. They don't want to be stereotyped. So, like, they're going to try to avoid certain numbers and, like, try to not, you know, type themselves a certain way because they don't want to be seen that way. But that might be exactly what their type is. It's just, like, the perception of the angry Black woman is really, really difficult to, like, reconcile. I feel like in my head, I'm trying to think of other types that have cultural stereotypes. For the one, it's kind of like this, like, Uncle Tom. I don't know if you know what an Uncle Tom is. From my understanding of an Uncle Tom, it's like someone who, like, is Black but rejects their Blackness, right?
Oh.
Because they're the standard is whiteness, right? So they kind of have to be this, you know, posh, put together, like, oh, like they anytime they see, like, someone who's acting in their opinion, right, like, not appropriate, like, it's very ones Black ones can be very, like, what is this word? They're good at code switching. Threes and ones are good at code switching. A lot of other types would never code switch. Fours would not code switch. Eights will not code switch. Like, I feel like it's kind of like this, what is this word? It's like when you work so hard to, like, fit what you know is going to be perceived as good. Like, I don't know. I feel like the word is really important in this situation. But my point is that, like, culture matters more than we think when people are figuring out their Enneagram types. And it also matters when you're trying to type people. I think that's why I also like type. That's why I type so many, like, Black TV shows. Cause I'm like, I want people to see what this might look like in a Black body. I will say this. All of my typings are 100% wrong because I do not know these people. I don't know their actual motivations. I'm just guessing, right? I'm going off of what I can tell, what the TV show has given me. But that is actually so really, really important, because then people kind of get this opportunity to see like, oh, I'm a four. This is a black TV character who's also a four, but I don't present that way. And they can kind of like appreciate like fours come in like different shades and colors.
It reminds me a little bit of movie therapy and what I might do with movie therapy.
Okay.
But you know, what's interesting is I remember when I was reading the blog on your website, mm-hmm. you wrote about these two worlds in the Enneagram, specifically the Instagram space.
Yeah.
Can you tell the listeners about the two worlds
right.
in the Enneagram space on Instagram?
Right. So what I observed when I first started learning about the Enneagram is that on Instagram, there's kind of two spaces. One space is really focused on Enneagram education. These are, you know, they're probably like certified therapists who've already like done a lot of work. You know, they're very deep people. They do coaching sessions. They do trainings. They do courses. Like they are the people who are focused on like just taking the wisdom of the Enneagram and changing and transforming lives on a very deep, serious level, right? That's one side. And that side is like vital. If you really want to grow in the Enneagram, you have to get to that side. But that can be very daunting and scary for people. So I think there's another side. I've noticed there's another side of the Instagram Enneagram space that's focused on the fun ways that you can infuse like everyday living, pop culture, entertainment into the Enneagram to make the tool more palpable for beginners, right? Make it more alluring for beginners and also make it more like interesting to young people, because I think that young people we just like really love to have fun and enjoy things. And I think that for me, because I really want to see more young people actually care about their own self-development and their own personality, I like wanted to use very like fun, engaging, like creative, like avenues to get young people into the space. So in the beginning of you know, my Enneagram journey, I kind of felt very understood and seen by the educational side of the Enneagram, because you know they're going to the core. They're not really talking about surface level like fun, like silly things. But when I was on this other side of it, I was like, oh, I don't see myself represented in here. Like, I don't see myself like the examples that people were giving of like, oh, if you're type one, you probably do this. I was like, I don't do that. And this, and you could tell that it was coming from there's no animosity or no like, oh my gosh, you guys just left me out. I don't think it was intentional. It's just like people can only talk about their own social location. You can only talk about things from your like white female perspective, right? I can only talk about things from my own social location.
Yeah. That's a great way to say it.
But I can only talk about things from a black female, or honestly, specifically a Nigerian American female like perspective. So there's even things that I'm going to miss, right? As a Nigerian American, because I'm not sure how aware you are of this, but like Nigerian Americans and black Americans have differences. Like we're not like all a monolith. Like blackness is not a monolith. We all kind of, I've had to learn black culture throughout my time because I just did not grow up in that. So my point is I did not feel very seen in that, the fun, silly side. So I was just like, I want to be that person. I want to be the one who brings the fun, the joy into the Enneagram, but for specifically black women. I think that was kind of the focus for a very long time. It's still the focus. But I think I've kind of branched out to being like people of color now. Like I really want to include everyone because I know how it feels to not feel included, to not feel like you are represented in the typing system. That was really, really important for me. So yeah, my mission was like really, really simple. Like I wanted to start this page that would serve as like a creative and engaging like space for people of color on the more like fun and like the more fun, lighthearted side of the Enneagram. Like I also use art. So all the art that you see, I actually taught myself how to graphic design during the pandemic. That was my pandemic project.
I love your art so much. you already know that. I'm obsessed with your art. What's happening right now?
It's honestly, that's like my, that was the way beautiful. I spent my pandemic time. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
Something that I saw in the book that you recommended by Chi Chi, she wrote, the lack of diverse teachers of a system leaves a critical absence of knowledge.
Yeah.
And so it's just really cool that you could bring in that piece.
Right. And I think I also have learned that like all types of knowledge matters. Like even fun knowledge matters. Like it doesn't always have to be super deep. Like all of it has its place.
It's a fun way to learn.
Fun way to learn.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. So we talked about ending the segment today with one of your TV typings.
Yes.
And we talked about a show that has good representation.
Yes.
And that we thought many people would know about, Jane the Virgin.
Yes.
Okay. So what do we think?
Okay, so first I want to say, because like it's so difficult to type people, like there's gonna be multiple possible types. Like I think if you go back to the post I made, I'm probably gonna change my types. I think as time goes on, you start to realize, oh, like, the more I learn about that, the more I learn about the types, I'm currently getting certified by the narrative tradition. Like, the more that I'm going through those trainings, I'm like, oh, I was wrong.
Oh.
Like, I didn't fully understand how this type was showing up. Like, I think as you grow in your enneagram knowledge, the way that you type things will be different. So yeah, just wanted to put that little caveat.
Yeah, and one thing that you and I had talked about before today that I thought was so interesting is that, you know, to type, you have to have quite a bit of character development.
Yes, you do.
And with 100 episodes of Jane, it helps.
You have a lot.
It helps. There's 100.
Yeah, and they're very consistent characters, which is the good thing. I think it's when they become kind of inconsistent and like in the middle of the show, they completely change as a person, it kind of throws you off.
Right.
Like shows like, another show that's really good at that is This Is Us. This Is Us has consistent character development. Like,
oh, nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
good
I definitely,
to know.
I definitely
this is
look
us.
At that.
Okay.
Yeah. But yes, so we start with the one and only Jane. I think the most obvious type for Jane is a one, but she might be a six.
Oh, she might. Oh, yes. Yeah. I didn't think about a six.
Anxiety is her life.
Oh, I didn't think about a six.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I don't know if you noticed about sixes, but six have something called an inner counsel.
Oh.
Do you remember those scenes where like she would like talk to multiple versions of herself?
Yes. Yeah, well, I mean, I did see about the six that the six is the type that will go to a whole bunch of people for advice.
Yes, exactly.
A whole bunch of people.
That's the inner and outer council, I guess,
right.
now.
Yeah, inner and outer. Oh, yeah. I didn't think about
so
that,
she could
of
be either
course.
One. She could be
yep.
either one.
Yep, good call.
Yep. All right, and then Petra. This one is really, for me, I thought Petra was so obvious, but I could be wrong. But I think she's an eight. What are you?
Oh,
actually, really?
Of course. Sorry, I'm just like. Brain is breaking over here. That's a great call.
Yeah,
because I at first I thought she was more obviously a three, but I think you're right. She's there's a lot of eight there.
Yeah.
What do you think? So what? Eight because.
So I think Petra's an eight because, you know, at the beginning of the show, you kind of see that she's like being controlled by her mom. Like her mom is in her ear trying to tell her who to be, what to do. So she's kind of listening to that. That's a very three thing. Like threes define success based off the people who they care about. But when her mom passes away and her mom finally just kicks rocks, like she kind of gets to be herself and kind of gets to kind of come into that like eight energy, that desire to like control and be in charge. I think that's the way I would describe Petra, is like she wants to be in charge. She wants to control the situation. She wants to have kind of like she wants to protect even herself and her daughters. I think that was also a defining factor for the eight, was like the way that she was such a champion for her kids and like protect them. And even the way that like her kids were raised, like her kids were also kind of eights. Like her kids were like very like, you know, sassy, very much like going to say what's on their mind. So I think she even raised them with this kind of like sense of control and this sense of like, don't let anyone play with you. Don't let anyone harm you. Like protect yourself. And she had, when her mom passes away, she kind of comes into herself a little bit more than she was when she was being, you know, puppeted by her mom and manipulated by her mom. I think might be a two, but you know, it's okay.
Before the show, you said something that I wanted you to save for the interview, but you said the fact that he's hard to type makes me think of his type.
Yeah, and nines struggle with that. It's hard for nines to figure out their type because they can really be anything.
Yeah, and it's interesting because when Michael was kind of tapping into his shadow side, it would be behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And he wasn't upfront about that side of himself.
Yeah. And you can see, so for the nine, they go to three in stress and growth and growth in, they go to three and nine in stress and growth. There we go. So you can kind of see him in his like six anxiety, like anxious place. You can also see him in his three when he's like working and doing his detective work. Like, you know, he's very focused, very like,
totally.
There's a goal, there's a mission here. So I think that's kind of that's the best like, type I could think of.
That's
he might
great.
Be something different. I could be wrong. I'm always going to say that I can be wrong.
But I just learned so much through that typing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You
exactly.
Know?
That's why I
it's
do
a really,
it.
Yeah, that's such a fun way to do it. Dio, thank you so much for today and for the work that you do giving people of color a place where they can feel seen and understood by the wisdom of the Enneagram. Mm. And I love how you say being able to see yourself in a tool is the first step to using the tool and engaging with it.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. It's great to have you here. I learned so much, and
so
I know
fun.
That our listeners did too.
Yes, yes. I'm glad that as ones we got to have a little bit of fun on this.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, thank you for joining us today for another episode of Therapy Rocks. And a reminder that you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And feel free to contact me at www.signadarpinian.com. We'll see you next month.